Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
One thing I'm thankful for is the pizza in Nashville. I feel like I need to give a shout out to the pizza in Nashville. We have really good pizza. And it was just on my mind because I ate 5 points yesterday. Man, 5 points with an arugula salad and a pepperoni slice and some garlic knots. So good. But that's not it. That's the thing. Emmy Squared. Have you ever had Emmy Squared?
No.
It's like the Detroit style, like fancier. Incredible. And then there's this new place right by my studio over here called Dicey's. And that's the thinner crust, like tons of pepperonis, almost like St. Louis cracker style kind of thing. Like we have like four or five, what I would consider to be like a better score than 7.5 out of 10 places. We're very lucky, but welcome to Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Scunnell, and my longtime friend from work, Peter Parker. as you can see by his glasses today, welcome,
video
Peter.
Video plug.
Yeah, video, true.
Man, you know, it's actually, that's kind of a perfect place to start. And here's the thing, I'm not going to start talking about Spider-Man movies today.
Yeah, you are.
Like I have been. I could, because this last week was the finale of the whole Spider Watch. But the thing about No Way Home is I feel like we talk about it every couple episodes for some reason anyway. So my Spider-Man connection instead will be like, I think we brought this up on the initial episode, but today we're going to be talking about Ms. Marvel. And I noticed again in the finale, there are a couple like either intentional or subconscious, like Raimi Spider-Man references there that I really appreciate. And it makes me excited to talk about Ms. Marvel and kind of the, as we're talking about the future and the Spider-Man of it all there, because we've also kind of been speculating about the next Spider-Man movie. So it's appropriate.
There were a few more references to things in general than I remembered on my last watch of Ms. Marvel. I think, like we said a couple of weeks ago, we're just going to do a Spider-Man episode, because once you said that, I actually have a few balls in the air right now, potentially, regarding a Spider-Man episode. And so, yeah, we're due sometime soon. Sometime soon.
Yeah. Well, and there are some rumors that, you know, as we're getting into the Spider-Man director rumor mill, that kind of link up with Ms. Marvel.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm really excited about today. Really stoked about my rewatch of Ms. Marvel, because I have a few excellent hot takes. I think I'm going to double down. So I'm excited about that. Before we dive into Ms. Marvel and that rewatch, I wanted to share one other piece of MCU news, which I found particularly interesting given our episode 2 weeks ago, which, like we said so many times, was a really fun episode. We just talked generically about the MCU. But since that episode, did you see this Robert Downey Jr. quote? And again, you can always follow our newsletter on Substack. A few people had questions about that. We kind of stopped posting the newsletter, I think, on Patreon, which maybe you and I need to figure that out. And maybe there's a way to do that. But if you're on Patreon and you haven't, you can still hop over to Substack and subscribe to the free newsletter. Keep your Patreon subscription. But just to get the weekly news, because Greg does a good job of rounding some of this stuff up, and it's a better format than me reading it off my phone on a podcast episode. But I digress. Did you see that quote, Robert Downey Jr. is becoming surprisingly open-minded to the idea of returning as Tony Stark? So total contrast to what I said 2 weeks ago, quote, it's just crazily in my DNA. Probably the most like me character I've ever played, even though he's cooler than I am. I'm becoming surprisingly open-minded to the idea. Now, I don't think I actually want Tony Stark back on any significant level, although a cameo in Secret Wars would kill, as we've talked about. A cameo would just slaughter the audience.
And I feel like if they did that, it would be more than a cameo, which I'd be okay with at this point, as long as it's introduced and wrapped within that kind of Secret Wars project, or the one preceding it and Secret Wars.
I think more than that, though, I'm weird about this stuff. I love what it means for how he feels about the MCU. Like, I just, I love when these actors, I said this last week too with Oscar Isaac, I love when they have a chance to go, no, I'm over that. Like, that was a thing, and whatever. I did it for the money. And they don't. In fact, they double down the other way. And it brings my heart so much joy. Where it's like, if anybody would feel comfortable right now just closing the door and going, you know what, guys, that was a phase. I'm in a different part of my career. I'm thankful for it, but I'm over it. It's Robert Downey Jr. It's just so cool to me that he's like, well, it's just so in my DNA. I'm not against it.
Well, it's also, it makes me happy because I feel like he probably genuinely misses the character. Like, if you think about from 2008 to, you know, 2019 in terms of the release dates of those films, not even the production schedules, like, he was in the Tony Stark persona for over a decade. I mean, because he just kept dipping back in. Like, I'm trying to think, the longest we went without a Tony Stark appearance was what, maybe
that's
2 years?
That's a fascinating question.
Like, I'm trying to think, because 2008, so 2 years from 2008 to 2010, and then 2 years from 2010 to 2012. But then from there on, he's in Iron Man 3 and 13, and then...
Yeah, Civil War, Iron Man 3 to Civil War, maybe? Well, no, Age of Ultron? No, Age of Ultron and Civil War.
I think
Civil
2 years is the most we ever went without. Because after Age of Ultron, it's year after year, because it's
Homecoming.
Civil War, then Homecoming, then Infinity War, then
Endgame. Yeah.
So it's like I don't think he ever would have had time to get out of character the way that even some superhero actors, like Robert Pattinson, is not like living in Batman. Like, he did a movie, and then he's been like doing other things and coming back in. But like, I think I like the idea that Tony views that like fondly and maybe misses that. And Robert misses that. And
well, that actually leads perfectly into my point, which is just that I think it's not just that he did it for so long. It's that it's also a perfect casting, because I think there is a little bit of Robert Downey Jr. in Tony Stark. Like he says, it's in my DNA. He's not as cool as Tony Stark, but if you ever watch him off camera, that wasn't that difficult of acting for him, because it's him. It's kind of like how I feel about Jim Halpert and John Krasinski. In a lot of ways, that is him, kind of. And this was him. And so, it's impossible to get away from it entirely, I think. Except for the fact that he's dead in the sacred timeline, you know? So.
Right. But, you know, it is interesting. I was thinking, have you seen the trailer for this new Channing Tatum, Scarlett Johansson movie about like the moon landing?
No, I haven't.
It looks great. I mean, really? I don't know if it will be, but I think it's like an Apple TV thing.
Okay.
I was thinking how interesting it is that the two characters that had firm endings, that, you know, actual deaths in Endgame, like, those are the actors that I feel like have landed in the best spot following the Infinity Saga. Like, Scarlett Johansson followed that up immediately with a double Oscar nomination for Marriage Story and Jojo Rabbit. She has also been, and now she's wanting to come back and produce an MCU project. And
which
then,
would be fun.
Yeah. And then RDJ, you know, obviously going and having fabulous success with Oppenheimer and kind of wanting to come back. There's something like, I feel like they got, like they wanted a chance to get out from under the MCU shadow for a little bit and show that like they didn't,
right?
They weren't typecast.
Yeah.
But now I feel like they've done that and are more comfortable coming back and just enjoying it and having fun with it, as long as it doesn't mess with the story, which sure. I feel like is kind of where Kevin Feige is too.
I totally agree with that. So this is not an argument. I do want to add to it that it's been pretty cool to see like the original Avengers 6 is not like a Seinfeld curse or a Lost curse or how a lot of the characters from The Office didn't go on to do other things except for Steve Carell. Like that tends to be the case when you are a role for so long and it's so significant to people. That's how they always view you. I have also appreciated that Chris Hemsworth has gone on to do Furiosa and get a lot of rave reviews. And Chris Evans has gone to do Knives Out. And like, it's not like they've fallen off the map. They actually are still very relevant. And I think Jeremy Renner would have been doing more too if he hadn't gotten in the accident. So actually, well, and Mark Ruffalo, obviously, right?
Yeah. Well, and the Mayor of Kingstown show that Renner's in has also gotten rave reviews. I haven't watched it, but I know that that's...
So it's like the total opposite, actually, now when I think about it. These people were kind of nobodies or misfits from Hollywood, got put together for the Avengers, became megastars, the highest paid actors and actresses in their industry, massive worldwide celebrities, ended their runs in the MCU or left some of them lingering, and then still went on to do like Oscar-winning and nominated projects. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
It is, and it's also so different than any other... Like, you're right. Not even just, like, the Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, like, massive, massive franchises, but even just other comparable, like, superhero franchises. Like, we've been going through the X-Men films.
Yep.
We've been, like, prior to that, we went through all the DC stuff. And those movies have not, at least recently, like, made careers in the same way. Like, the X-Men, the original X-Men movies certainly made Hugh Jackman's career. But otherwise, it's like you don't see films like those are kind of like people dip in and do something and then they kind of either come out at a lateral spot or they don't really come out of it.
Yeah, right.
And so it is. Yeah, it's I think it says something about the quality of the films as well.
No doubt. Today's episode is brought to you by Nerd Riot, nerdriot.shop, to get all of your nerd merchandise, including one of my favorite shirts they've ever made, which is a Miss Marvel, like, lightning bolt shirt. Which
I was hoping you were going to be rocking it today.
You know what? I ripped it on accident. I cut a hole in it right in the middle. I went to, like, grab something and pulled it really tight and ripped a hole right in the middle. So I need to get a new one. But I've always loved that shirt. It's very cool looking. Perfect example of, if you know, you know. And then organicpricebooks.com for your comic book needs, which is relevant because Iman Vellani, star of Miss Marvel, is actually co-writing some current comic runs that you can probably get, I'm guessing you would know more than me, on organicpricebooks.com. Both links are in the show notes and both promo codes are Friends From Work, all one word, so it saves you money on already great and discounted stuff. Nerdriot.shop, organicpricebooks.com. Robbie, I need to shut off a fan in my room, so give us a quick intro into Miss Marvel while I'm off headset. Good luck.
Oh, wow. Here we go. Now it's just me and the listener here. I was so... Like, anytime that we're going back to rewatch a series, it's always a little bit of a struggle for me because obviously it takes more time, but it's also like I'm a movie person over a TV person, and I've kind of come to terms with that. There are people that do a much better job at following prestige TV, whereas I've kind of gone all in on just keeping up with movies. Hmm. So I was like a little... I wasn't like dreading watching Miss Marvel, and it had nothing to do with the show itself, but I was just kind of putting off the six-hour journey.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Five.
I started it and just had a blast. I had the best experience. It was like, what's funny is I think generally Shang-Chi, which we covered last week, is a movie or, you know, a project that people consider to be, you know, higher in quality or like it was generally better received. Again, it's kind of hard to compare movies and TV, but I came away from Shang-Chi feeling pretty like, yeah, you know, it was, that was good. Like, and we talked about that. Mm-hmm. I feel like we were kind of on the same page here. There are still issues that it sounds like you're going to raise and I want to talk about, but I think in general, I had a much stronger positive reaction to this project than I did to Shang-Chi, even if there were also like more negatives because of how much I like certain elements of this.
No doubt. And by the way, is our next stop on the rewatch journey She-Hulk, another show?
It is.
Okay, so listeners, if you're wanting to stay along with us, we're going to watch all the episodes of She-Hulk before next week. So, and then Super Friends, if you want to get any questions in or thoughts in, hit us up on the hotline or on the Dropbox link and we'll get your video in here. But yes, She-Hulk next week. I'm totally with you, man. So much so that I screenshotted a text conversation you and I had, which is going to be on the video portion of this episode here in a second.
Oh, wow. Fancy.
Yeah. Just because, first of all, you and I don't often talk at all about the projects before we get on here on like a Friday morning. But especially we're not often watching them at the exact same time in texting, which I mean, it almost never happens anymore. We save our thoughts for the podcast. I have two very hot takes on this and they're extremely different. And I think it's actually just a doubling down of our original episode. So because you kicked us off this way, man, through two episodes, which is what we had for our screener, Miss Marvel is slash was on pace for being like one of the best Disney Plus shows, period. Hands down. Like the first two episodes are maybe one of the best things they've ever made.
Yeah.
And that's going to sound crazy to people who just thought it was too woke or like didn't watch it or it wasn't for them. But I remember getting that screener going, oh my gosh, they did it again. This is so different and yet as excellently done as possible. And so let's just camp out there for a second. I think that's underrated. I think listeners, even right now listening to this podcast, are missing the fact of how good this show started and ended, but also just in general, how good some aspects of this show were. Like it gets breezed over. It gets glossed over. I haven't rewatched it admittedly a ton. Let's just start with the first two episodes. The cast introduced. Iman is unbelievable for Miss Marvel and her family is such a shining point of the show. And her connection to New Jersey and her school friends is such a win. Let's talk about her family.
Yeah.
Her brother is legit hilarious. Her mom is legit hilarious. Her dad is legit hilarious. You buy all of their chemistry and tension. I remember you texted me, and I'll share that in a second, about her dad dressing up as the Hulk. And that's perfect level of like, it's still brutal. It devastates you. And the stakes are as low as humanly possible. And it's still devastating. That's the example of like the tension you and I are looking for from a character like Miss Marvel.
Yeah, man, I just want to second the praise for the entire family cast, because even like all the way through the entire series, like even the episodes that I thought were weaker, I was paying attention to like her mom.
Whenever they show
there
up,
are some,
you're like, yes.
Man, it's like some of those moments are just so well executed, like all throughout. Whenever she's in the bathroom, like cleaning her, like her knee that's been scraped from falling and her mom comes in and hugs her and realizes that she's hugging her back really tightly and that something's wrong. And there's kind of this look of like, it's just there's a lot of like subtle face acting going on that I think is like, again, for this style of show.
Yep.
Like for what they're trying to do, like within the, like almost the YA genre, I feel like it's, they're pulling off a lot of nuance in those moments, even in episodes that are kind of generally failing to have nuance. Every time we have those moments with her and her mom or her brother or her dad.
Her dad and her brother, that conversation at the wedding.
And I remember us talking about that on the initial episode.
Her but brother like her when he comes into her room?
Yeah. Well, even him showing up at the high school at the end, I think is well done.
Yep.
Like, it's like that could have been out of nowhere and cheesy, but it's like this idea of everyone kind of rallying behind her.
Her mom is really funny. Dude,
the final
funny.
Episode.
Her mom is really funny.
Yeah.
Are you talking about a party at night? We, her dad, come on, her dad, was it? Oh yeah, Kamala. We trust you. No, we don't. At the exact same time. Yes, we do. No, I don't. She has a lot of funny lines. Her brother in the finale when he goes, oh, wow, I didn't know that about Nightlight. Yeah.
I like when...
We called you haram.com, boy.
when she's in bed in Karachi and her mom's coming in to get her to go to lunch, and she's just like, hey, please don't be weird. We're here to visit. The point is to visit. It's just the most like... It all feels so not forced, like, and with stuff like this, I just it's so key to have chemistry, or those moments will always fall flat, especially when you have so many of them. And that is that's the reason why I think I come away from this project generally with like goodwill, I guess. Like, yeah.
By the way, it has 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. So to some critics, it's not that hot to say.
Oh, no, no. And I think that I remember after the show came out, I had such a like up and down experience with it. And we talked about that a lot on the show because we were so high on those initial episodes. And then the middle two episodes kind of took a left turn. But I remember after, you know, a couple months after it had come out, I think it was Damon Lindelof had posted something about how he just watched all of Ms. Marvel and how incredible it was. And I remember thinking like, wow, okay. So he was like, I guess he wasn't bothered by the stuff that bothered us. Hmm. But I also thought he must have watched it all at once based on like when he was posting it, which is, I'm sure, how a lot of people wound up watching the show, especially if they wound up watching the Marvels and went back.
I think very few people do it like us, which was watch two episodes and then wait 4 weeks to see the follow-up, heavily anticipating the follow-up, you know?
That's true. But I do think that this is a show that really benefits from a binge watch. Like we've talked about separate projects. Like, I still think that there are some that don't. I still kind of like the week to week for WandaVision.
Yeah, just because of the sitcom nature, for sure.
Right.
And the cliffhangers.
But I think that things moving more quickly and not having that time to wait for it, it makes the clandestine stuff feel like it's not as big of a part of the show. Sure. And so, I think that just in general, I feel a lot more confident in recommending this show after this rewatch than I think I would have before.
I have so much praise for some aspects of this show. I think it might be the best version of mixing in pop music outside of maybe the Guardians, the way it did that. But every time a song comes on, I'm like, this is a banger. And it, I mean, starting with Vampire Weekend, is it?
That's The Weeknd, right?
The Weeknd. Sorry. Yes. Starting with Blinded by the Lights. So freaking good. And then it's just like they found like, and I don't know these, admittedly, they found like cultural, like India, Pakistani bangers that are just like so perfect. It works every time from the start to the finish. In the finale too, when she's running across her little nightlight stuff in the sky. It's such a cool song. I'm telling you, and Laura Cartman did a good job with the music. I mean, the moment in the second episode with Iman and Kamala and Bruno on the roof, and they do that little theme. I also didn't realize to the degree that Laura Cartman hinted at the Marvels theme, like in the post-credit sequence already. She already had that, which is cool.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
So I thought in general, the score necessarily isn't like my favorite score or the best score in the MCU, but the pop placements, holy cow, so good.
I'm a big fan of the score, more so than any of Cartman's other stuff in the MCU. And I like the Marvels a lot too.
I just like the Marvels theme. I listen to it all the time.
But I really like on our Journey Through the MCU playlist, I really do enjoy the Ms. Marvel section. Like, she does so many different things, and I've just grown. I'm excited to have Laura back on the show at some point, especially if, I don't know if you ever watched American Fiction.
But the stuff
that she did there, it's just a straight like jazz score, which is so cool. And it's like she has this way to just like pop into whatever genre and just knock it out of the park. Like, it's, you hear different things that she's doing, even between What If and this and the Marvels. And it's like, she's not one of these composers that has like a set sound. Like, she can, like, she still has her own, like her stamp that she's putting on things. But she has a way of like filtering it through, and it's kind of this like delightful
versatility.
Like, all of the tracks that she puts like behind some of these things, it also fits really well. It's like what we talked about with Tyler Bates in the original Guardians films. I think she does a really good job of working with those needle drop placements.
Can I praise some more stuff real quick that I just feel like didn't get enough spotlight?
Yeah.
The editing of the actual cuts is so genius and adds to the comedic timing. I love it so much. Like, when the intro credit with the bad, 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 bad boy will just cut immediately in the middle of Bruno going, what? And it will cut it like, we're going to the party? What? Like, those kind of cuts.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually adding to the humor. Also, Iman in the first two episodes especially makes almost as memorable of an entrance as I can remember for a new character. In like, Anika and I just love, legitimately, I have chills, love when she first walks into school and she's shy and people don't know her name. And then when she kind of has these powers and she's falling in love with this guy, the second time she goes back through and she's like owning the, you know, like doing the double finger guns and actually my name is this. Like, it's really funny. And then like the bad, bad, bad boy stuff when she's in love and the whole room is lit red in her mind. By the way, she opens the freezer and there's Jenny's ice cream in the freezer. We paused it. I'm like, is that Jenny's?
Oh,
shout
wow.
out to my That's favorite crazy. Ice cream in the world in her freezer. Don't know how she has Jenny's there in New Jersey, which is really cool. But anyways, that whole scene's so funny when she's dancing to the song and like, it's just, I don't know. I'm not underselling it, am I? I love it. I love it. And that's where I'm going to share this image. We were halfway through the second episode and I texted you this picture. As if you're watching this on video, you can see it now. But I texted you like, this is unbelievable. And you responded saying, oh my goodness, I was just going to text you. Like, this is so good.
Yeah.
And her brother's good. And I'm glad we weren't wrong on our original two screener episodes. So Iman, the cast, I think Bruno's funny. I think her family is charming. But on top of all that, the music placements, everything we've talked about already, I want to say one other thing that's just so cool. I think in general, the envisionment, the vision of the character itself is such a perfect fit for the MCU. Now, some characters work, I think, better in comics than they would ever in a translated onto screen format. Some, because of the way the MCU started and grew, don't work as well. Like we've talked about, like it's going to take some maneuvering to figure out the X-Men side of this, right? This, to me, is the perfect, literal new introduction of a character post Tony Stark and the Marvel Cinematic Universe Infinity Saga as we know it, as you can do. And I have some reasons for that. Not only Iman, we've talked about that. Just to have a character that's totally not a threat to what the Avengers were. In fact, she's younger. She's a mega fan. She's grown up a fan of this world, which is so cool to me. Like, she goes to Avenger Con. She slowly gets her powers. It's kept marginally, you know, except for one time, at a ground level. when she does eventually meet Captain Marvel, it's not because she thinks she's on the same level. It's a massive, massive fan worshiping thing, which I think just adds such a fun dynamic for fans like us who do in general worship the Infinity Saga of the MCU to have a character portraying that, but also just that kind of charm that comes with it. The comments, the jokes about Ant-Man, about Thor. I just think, like, even more than like a Miles Morales would be, to your point. Like, if Miles Morales gets introduced, you're immediately thinking to yourself, like, there's some caveats, right? Like, we got to make sure Tom Holland is on the way out, and it doesn't work as well with two Spider-Mans. You know, it's antithetical to the character. But I just don't feel any of that with Ms. Marvel. Everything about it is like, that's the perfect character to kick off the new era with. Am I crazy?
Well, and no. In the introduction, like, even her name, like, that scene, which, like, is still so good.
The best scene of the show, potentially.
Yeah. I mean, it like, I almost choke up watching it.
I do choke up.
But that is so well done. Like, I love how...
I have children.
Like, it makes sense for her to have the name in a way that, like, you know, in the comics, there was a Ms. Marvel, and then it was Carol Danvers for the longest time. And then Carol Danvers took the name Captain Marvel, and there was this opening for Ms. Marvel that eventually Kamala Khan filled. But here, I really love the explanation, the fact that she's a fan in the way that she is. And, like, yeah, you're totally right. I think that to me sets up another pro for this, which is I think it works really, really well as a precursor to the Marvels film.
Sure.
Like, more than I even remember. I haven't watched this since watching the Marvels. And so seeing that, both in terms of, like, the dynamic that she has and, you know, all stuff that I kind of remembered vaguely, but now watching it with that a little bit fresher, I feel like the relationship that she has with the entire MCU, but then also, like, the way that her powers work and the way that, like, the bangle / the quantum bands work, and how we see, like, that's something that I think even salvages part of the clandestine stuff, which I still think is really bad, because it sets up this idea that she's, like, these can open portals to another, like, dimension or universe. And so the fact that we saw that here as something that, like you have people coming after this band primarily to open a gateway to some other dimension.
Yeah, right. Good point. That's a great point. How about the fact the arm they find it on is blue? Did you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, because I remember we were trying to figure out if that was, like, a Kree thing.
And it kind of must be, because in the Marvels, it is Kree looking for it.
I'm still, what do you think is the Ten Rings connection?
Well, and by the way, real quick, I think you're 100% right. I do think it's more the inverse, though, where because Ms. Marvel was so well received and Iman was such a blockbuster hit right away, the Marvels probably leaned heavier into Ms. Marvel post all of that than maybe probably originally planned. That's my guess. So it does lean into it, probably because they were like, well, frick, this is really good. We better involve this.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
But you're right with the actual mechanics of it. Yeah. Like, they are from another dimension and they're trying to use that to go back home. They're not trying to use it to destroy the world. They want to go back home to another dimension, which is exactly the power that it brings in the Marvels, which I'm with you, is way cooler. And I totally missed the first time we watched it. Well, we didn't know because we hadn't seen the Marvels yet.
And also, like, I think part of that is the general murkiness of what the clandestine are, like, what their motivation is and, like, where they came from. And, like, I feel like that would have been clear, or could have been clear. Like, that's a weakness of the show, I think. Not that, like, again, we wouldn't have really understood the connection anyway until we got to the end of the Marvels and saw that the Monica X-Men moment. But still, I think that, like, there's a world where the clandestine could have been less, like, cartoonishly evil. and they were just trying to get back, like in the same way.
Just hold on. We're talking about the first. Like, two. Yeah, hold on.
But because we didn't get that, I think I didn't even remember that that was their goal necessarily. I just knew that they were generally like they were wanting the band, and they were like, I knew they were kind of wanting to go to open the portal to their world, but I didn't really know why or what that, like what effect that would have.
It's kind of cool to me that the bands aren't really weapons, quote unquote, right now in hindsight. Like they're mm-hmm. there to protect her. Like when something gets shot at her, she can kind of block it or enlarge her hands to catch somebody or stop something, but it's not really lashing out as much. And it's a portal creator to get home. And then in the Marvels, same kind of thing. It can take Darben's like energy and absorb it. It opens up the portal at the end of the film, but I'm with you. I like that it's all tied. It's all really tied. Which again, I just want to reiterate, I do think there are a lot of listeners that because of the clandestine stuff and because of the way we talked about it, just think that this show is not worth it. And I can't emphasize enough, this is one of the better entries for at least a while, or at least in parts of it that they've ever had, period. The last thing is those first two episodes in particular, it's just so fun, Robbie, to feel so grounded in New Jersey. It has a Spider-Man-esque feel in that you're going into a bodega and you're seeing the mosque that's local and she's saving one person from falling off the roof and people are catching it on their phones.
Right.
And like, it just feels like and they don't know her identity and who is this? And she's hiding it from people. And it's got such a charming New Jersey feel, the Bon Jovi references, the establishing shots of the skylines to know where we are and the rooftop things feel so New Jersey.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I looked it up. The mosque itself is the Fox Theater in Atlanta, which is kind of funny, which I've actually been to. That's the mosque. Crazy.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wait, isn't that where we saw?
Did you and I go together?
Wakanda Forever?
No. Not the Fox Theater. No. Hold on. Where was that? Not the Fox Theater, though. No. The Fox Theater's got like a very like Persian look, even inside. Right? We didn't go to that theater. Like crazy, like elaborate.
Maybe we just stayed right by that theater.
Oh, that might be it. Across the street. It's on Peachtree, I think. Yeah. Right? Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah.
I think we stayed across the street from the Fox
Theater. I think that's right.
But that's the back of that is the mosque. The outdoor.
That's cool. I did not know that.
Yeah. I looked
this. But I can see it now.
Well,
yeah,
I looked this all up because I was curious. Yes, right? How much this did they actually film in New Jersey? Which is the answer, sadly, is not a ton. But all those establishing shots was filmed. Like they did go to New Jersey and film all the skylines and like the rooftops and stuff. So they had that.
Yeah. And I do love the piece of her living in New Jersey that lets her look out at the New York skyline.
For sure.
Like, I think that is an interesting, for someone that's such an MCU fan or a Avengers fan, I feel like every time she kind of looks over, there's like you can see exactly what's going on in her mind. And I feel like that's really well done.
Yeah, for sure. And you know me, I like these heroes to come from different locations. Like I feel like during the Sam Raimi era, this is not a fault of his, but everything was so New York focused. Everything was always New York. No.
Right.
And I like in general seeing a San Francisco wing. I like when the Avengers move their tower upstate. I love seeing Moon Knight in London. I like seeing Kamala in New Jersey. And I like seeing Riri referencing Boston or Chicago. Like I think it's just cool to have that. So anyways, I do love the New Jersey side of it. Okay. I love it. I want people to know that. That is my biggest takeaway from Ms. Marvel. We'll be right back with my other hot take after a quick word from these sponsors. We were just talking off air during that break. I thought that The Fall Guy, we went into it with lower expectations. I saw it as a screener. Annika and I had kind of circled that movie as far as like, that's our genre. Annika loved it. And I posted on social media about it. Thought it was so funny. The meta references to the film industry were pretty fun, I thought. Yeah. And we were just talking because you saw it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
I mean,
I thought Furiosa was good. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was nearly as good as Mad Max. It was not as tight. It was a little bit too long. But
yeah,
the main cast I thought was unbelievable. And when we got to those action set pieces, like Mad Max is for like 90% of the film, I rewatched Mad Max last week. You forget how much of Mad Max is just a straight action movie. It's just them battling on the road. That's like, I'm not kidding. That's probably half the runtime.
Yeah.
Here it was maybe.
And I do appreciate that they like broke with that a bit, you know, like I like that.
Sure.
This isn't all just like the same. Okay. We're driving a big rig for the entire time, except now it's just Anya Taylor-Joy instead of Charlize Theron.
Which I thought she was awesome. I thought she was awesome.
Yeah. Although, man, it's crazy. She doesn't even show up until like an hour into the movie.
That's what I also mean by it's really long. I was like, oh, I said that literally to, who would I go to the screener with? But I said, oh my gosh, like she's still not in this movie. We're 45, 50 minutes in. She hasn't been here. But the little girl does a great job too.
Yeah, for sure.
Child actress. Like
And I do. Yeah, exactly. I see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought, and I'm biased, obviously, but I really liked Chris Hemsworth's performance here.
Just hateable beyond belief. I mean, there's no redeeming quality, basically.
But also, like, I there was a level, and I think I've seen this comparison made, but there was a level of, like, this Agent of Chaos thing where he's doing some, like, Heath Ledger Joker.
Sure.
Even to the point where, like, one of the things that I think makes the Joker villain so memorable in The Dark Knight is that he never actually loses. Like, at least he doesn't kind of accept any defeat.
Just twists
like, he's
it
hanging
into
there
a
and
win
laughing.
Somehow. Yeah.
And it's like, and then like, you know, the repercussions of what he's done last. And I love that even to the very end, like with that, well, I shouldn't spoil anything. Yeah.
Well, they make him so awful that you are a little bit pulling for what's his name, Joe, which is ironic because minutes later in Mad Max, he's like the ultimate villain that you just want to get his face ripped off, which does. That's what you want so bad. But in this movie, Hemsworth is worse. You're kind of pulling for him, Joe.
But he also does this kind of like diva thing, you know, like he's got the cape. Like there's, I love that there's this, like you can tell George Miller wanted him to channel a little bit of some of the Thor vibes that he brings, like the kind of like,
oh, for sure.
Larger than life thing, more than what you see Hemsworth do in a lot of his other projects.
There was a tiny bit of Thor from Love and Thunder in there. I know it sounds crazy to say, but like like standing on a rock and waiting for the battle to be finished kind of thing.
except, but then adding in this like sadistic mania
for sure,
where it's like the, I mean, and the, you know, the prosthetics are really fun. I just thought, I circle back to what we said a couple weeks ago whenever George Miller was doing press and talked about an interest in doing an MCU film. And I was kind of watching it through that lens. And I do think it would be fun to see him get a hold of Thor.
It'd be weird. So anyways, I thought the Fall Guy was, for the genre, excellent. I thought Furiosa was really good. Not great. I wouldn't say great. I thought there was some stuff that was not as good as Mad Max, which I think Mad Max is like, I mean, Mad Max is a top 25 movie since 2000, something like that.
I think
I don't think that's crazy to say. And then I still need you to see Planet of the Apes because
this
was all triggered because of the box office drama of those first two movies we talked about underperforming. And it's just crazy because maybe the movie industry is dying. Maybe it's just Memorial Day weekend. Maybe it's blah, 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 whatever. I'm not going to get into that, but it's not because those movies aren't good. That's what's weird. Is like those movies are actually really good. So if you didn't catch them in theaters, catch them at streaming at your home. Okay. Wow. That was a massive tangent. Really quick to kind of wrap up my feelings on Ms. Marvel. What's crazy is everything I said is true. And I don't think we've had a project like this, Rob. And I think you're going to be in total lockstep with me on this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the pinnacle, the most extreme version of what it looks like to just totally lose yourself for two episodes. In that, I think the lady who plays the lead clandestine is the worst actor that they've ever had in the MCU. And
wow,
that the cast of the Clandestines collectively is the worst collection of actors in the MCU. And mm-hmm. the decision to have that be a leading plot point for two episodes and how it's executed is probably the worst plot turn in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think I'm crazy, I'm trying to get clicks, I would ask you, who would you offer as the alternative? I was even thinking back to Thor 1 with his sidekicks. But even those people have a few moments that are better with chemistry and stuff. Who would you say is worse?
My appetite
exactly.
for apathy.
That's exactly where my brain went. Because I was thinking about the Incredible Hulk. Yeah. I was thinking about like the Volsek. I was thinking about the Incredible Hulk. I don't think there are acting performances as bad in the Incredible Hulk. And the Incredible Hulk at least knows what it wants as far as where the plot is going. It's just they're trying to chase this guy who's a Hulk the whole time.
Right. You know what's interesting? I was thinking about this through the lens of What If, because AC Bradley, who's a friend of the show, she and Matthew Chauncey, I think both wrote a lot on this series and What If you look at the episode credits there across both seasons. And looking at the Clandestine stuff through that lens, I can see where it would have worked better in like a What If context. Like, you take that plot line, you even take those actors and you animate it and you put it in kind of a like less grounded environment. And I don't think it would have been so terrible. Like, you can see what kind of the instincts there, but when you mesh that with how grounded, like what we were just talking about, so much of the first two episodes are of Ms. Marvel and how well that works, then you throw in a plot line like that and the way those characters are imagined, and it just feels so like it's not even out of left field. It's just like a different project now.
Exactly. Like it's weird
it's an incursion.
Yeah. The show creators even kind of realize it, because if you watch all six episodes, the first episode has almost nothing to do with it. And you get through halfway through the fifth episode and they wrap the Clandestine part, like it's totally wrapped in a bow. And then you realize, oh, we have to do another episode. Like, that wasn't the finale. Oh yeah, the show wasn't about that. We still have to do a whole nother episode about damage control back in New Jersey. And you're like, wait, so why, what in the world with that detour? I mean, it is.
And you know what's,
you turn on episode 3 and from the time that Kamala gets picked up, even Iman, I think starts feeling like less comfortable. It's less sure of the character. Like the conversation she has with them when it's like still polite and courteous at the house. It's like all of a sudden they're trying to really play into this is who you are. And they're like joking with like, oh, we're over 100 years old and he likes you. Yeah. And it's like, and she's uncomfortable with it. Like her acting gets worse. And then the one plot point that I cannot wrap my mind around the execution. And this is where you say, yeah, like maybe this would have worked better as two separate seasons.
Right.
Like Shang-Chi, this is season 2 on What If, of like, what if this happened? Because it has no place here, is when they actually invade the wedding. And it's been like a few hours. And the mother saying, we've given her enough chances. That's it. I'm killing everyone. And literally Kamran comes in and goes, everyone will die. I'm like, because Kamala said I have to look into it for an hour?
Right. Yeah, that's what...
I'm stunned.
It's so weird to me, because I can imagine if you wanted to use this plot point, I can imagine them coming in and one, it shouldn't have been that quick of a turnaround, because they go from being like so friendly and jokey to like so evil. But that's the other thing. Like if they had been more like, I'm trying to think what the villain analog would be here.
Well, because you're right. It's even the execution. Because even when they do show up then, you have that like crazy guy going like, I'm like,
yeah, no, exactly.
What are you so excited about killing everyone for?
Like, it's like, I think about like, even the Vulture, or in some, even Shang-Chi, you know, like the motivation of Wenwu, you understand, like it's not, yes, it's not rational, but you understand why he's doing this irrational thing. And he at least, like, you've got a whole scene where he's kind of,
well, for sure,
he's explaining to Shang-Chi and Katie why he's doing what he's doing, almost in this, like, I know it sounds crazy, but, and the point of all of that is it helps us actually relate enough to the villain to where we kind of understand some of the tension here.
Right.
And, you know, it's like Killmonger famously does that best. And I'm not trying to say like these villains should have risen to that level, but it's just, it's so weird because have them say like, look, you know, we don't want to hurt anybody. We're just trying to get home. Like, and there's like a sympathetic element there, but like, you know, we will hurt people if that's what it takes, because this means so much.
Right.
But instead it's maniacal? Like, oh man, we cannot wait to kill all of you. That is the best part of this. We're going to enjoy it. And then like, yeah, we also get to go home. Like, I just, it's like, why is this?
Yeah. I can't also understand the timeline, because the crazy lady also does it to the grandmother in the flashback episode in episode 5, where
yeah,
she sees her and goes like, oh, so this is where you've been hiding. And then they hug and she's like, oh, I thought you were dead. And she's like, we need to go home right now. And she's like, okay, let me just talk to my family and figure it out. She goes, you have until tomorrow morning. It's like, you've waited hundreds of years. And now right, the person, like Miss Marvel, is going, okay, I'm going to help you. But because it didn't happen in 12 hours, you're going to kill everyone. Like,
right.
And then to your point, it's not just, yeah, like you said, it's not just like a reluctant, like, well, now we have to get violent because you're not listening to us. It's like a, okay, finally, this is what we were waiting for. And I don't understand yeah, why that dimension is just maniacal. Okay, more stuff. I don't even understand what happens. Why do they go Raiders yeah, of the Lost Ark on us? Like, so the portal's open. Why can't they go in? Or is that them going in? Like, why does it melt them? I don't understand it.
I don't understand that at all. I still don't understand what exactly is supposed to have happened when she dies and gives her power to Kamron, and why it's like tearing him apart from the inside.
And she was so brutal to everybody and left Kamron. And then like 12 hours later, because Kamala said like, you have Kamron. She's like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to kill myself for him.
Yeah. It's so weird because it's like a moment, like, it's a moment to moment thing, right? Like, that's one thing that I kind of appreciated about the Marvels, and I think we talked about this, is as much as that villain was also cartoony, there was at least a level of consistency where you found, like,
yeah,
she had been working to, one, she had motivation that you understood, but you also saw, like, underlying that, there was just a like, sadistic impulse. And even once Carol offers this solution at the end, she's still wanting to kill Carol, because there's just this like revenge motivation. And you kind of like, I don't know, again, I'm not defending that villain as some great thing, but I at least kind of understand where she's coming from, but also why she's ultimately less of a sympathetic figure. But here it's so weird because it's not like, oh, she's been doing this the whole time, and then like we have this moment where she has a turn at the end. It's like there's a, like, from moment to moment, she opens the portal, like, and then less than a minute later after she's opened the portal, she's like, has this big change of heart and is like, well, now I have to close the portal.
Right. And it's been, and the only way that I can do it, of waiting,
it's
for
just
this portal,
such a weird, like, like, so she never thought about her son until like that exact moment. Like, there's no, like, when she's like flying over to Karachi, yeah, there's never like a moment where she's thinking, man, do I really want to do this? What about my son? It like takes Kamala saying, hey, by the way, you have a son, for her to decide, like, not just, oh, I shouldn't go through with this. I'm actually so against this now that I'm going to sacrifice myself to close the portal. It's just like,
why couldn't they physically
so much
get
happens
in? Why couldn't they get in physically?
I don't know. I'm also, I don't understand really what was supposed to happen there, because we're told at one point from Bruno that just the amount of energy that would be required to open that portal could cause this chain reaction that would destroy the world. Then we're told that if they open the portal, the newer dimension is going to like
take over,
overtake ours,
yeah,
which is kind of a different thing. And then we're told that they're trying to open the portal so that they can somehow save their dimension. Like that's what Kamran says at the end. And I don't understand what they're saving it from.
The writers are doing acid. There's no, I'm being funny.
But there's no consistency.
Like, there's no connectivity. I love so much of this show, but I genuinely am asking our listeners, I am an open mind. Send me worse performances in the MCU. Send me like, what's a plot line where it goes further left turn than this? I want to know. I can't think of one. And I've watched the MCU 10 trillion times. I can't think of a moment where I felt as like, and part of it probably is because of what they were doing so well for two episodes. Like right. It was so good. You didn't have to do any of it. The show could have existed without any of it. You could have just done damage control and trying to protect people in New Jersey and family dynamics. And Bruno doesn't like this new kid, Kamran, who's not powerful, but it's just a new student. Like all of that is funny. When Bruno's in the car and Kamran and Kamal are hitting it off, the fact that he calls him Brian, it's all funny. It all works. Everything works. Mm-hmm. You could have leaned into that she has a mutation at the end, and like that's the beginning of an expo. Like all of that is perfect.
Yeah.
Even if you have to only do five episodes, whatever. I'm okay with it. But you literally made the worst decision you could possibly make to try to make it all of this. And then when you try to make it, it's not executed well, it's not acted well, it's not believable, it's not consistent. It's one of the best shows they've ever made, and then one of the worst things I've ever made in the same season.
I think we said this at the time. I maintain that the partition episode could have still existed. Like,
sure,
I
think sure. there's a still way. Still go to Karachi.
Right.
To talk about the bangle. Oh, you could still talk about how the bangle was a portal opener.
And where that came from. And like, I still, but it's just.
So I'm really talking about 3 and 4 and then the wrap up of the back half of 5. Because 5, I like all that stuff.
Yeah.
In Karachi.
No, it's well done. And I think it actually further grounds her.
How about the fact that when she gets there and meets the Red Daggers, there's a guy literally playing guitar on the fire like Barbie makes fun of. I mean, they're literally like grooving.
Oh, man. That like,
and like trying to make them kind of like romantically interested for a second is so strange, right? I mean,
that's another thing. Like I think it's Aramis Knight. Is his name, but the guy that plays the Red Dagger is also pretty rough. Like acting wise, it's just the banter, but especially at the fire. Like I was watching it, and I think about halfway through episode 4, I was thinking, okay, yes, the whole like them crashing the wedding thing is so goofy and silly, but that aside, like, her going to Karachi, the stuff with, like, again, everything with her and her mom, everything with her and her grandmother.
The airplane
was working so well.
They're talking over that guy in the middle seat.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, you know what? This is actually like, we're into episode 4. And if I just kind of pull that wedding scene out, this is actually still really good.
When her mom shows up.
And then it's as soon as she meets the Red Dagger guy, it like nosedives. It gets so like, It gets Hallmark movie-ish or something. Like it's hard to describe. It's like such a weird quality drop on every level.
Yeah.
Like, and there's still some, like the scene, the car chase kind of thing through Karachi is still fun. Like there are things that are executed well around it.
Sure.
But it's like
the fact that she gets her suit in pieces like towards the end is still fun.
But man, it's also weird to me because
Hallmark Channel is the right call. Because my only other beef with the show in general from the beginning, although it doesn't really happen in the first episode or second episode, is there's a weird lighting thing. And I think I asked this 2 years ago. Did you notice it this time?
I did, yeah.
Like when they're standing on the rooftop overlooking Karachi with Kamala's grandmother, and it's clearly green screened. I get that. There's still such a disconnect between the green screen and the way they're lighting them.
Yeah.
There's even a shot where they're riding in a car and the New York skyline's outside. And I'm like, why are you lighting it like this? It feels so Hallmark movie and not like she's actually in the car. Like, why does her face have to glow? There's like a glow to it. They're glowing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why can't it feel? And that it must have been an intentional choice. But anyways, that's highlighted there too. Like,
yeah, no, for sure.
It looks weird too. And it is Hallmarky.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit embarrassing, to be honest.
Especially that beach scene. When we first took a real turn in our reaction to the show, I think was episode 4. So I think episode 3, we were like, wow, this is a bit of a drop.
Yeah, this is not what
but it was like,
yeah.
I remember coming in to talk about episode 4 and just being so
bummed out.
Because I had this moment watching it thinking, what am I watching right now? Like, how did I get here? Because
I don't know that I've ever felt that. That's my point. In the MCU. I'm trying to think of a time I felt that.
Falcon and
Winter Soldier, I don't think anyone ever feels as out of place, right?
No.
There's never a turn with Carly all of a sudden where you're like, this is totally unbelievable.
Right. No, it's like so much of the Falcon Winter Soldier stuff.
Secret Invasion, you can imagine. Same thing.
It's just a tightening, you know, like if you had more, but here it's like you have to like excise like some like cancerous growths on the show.
Yeah.
Where it's like
the thing is that so sucks is that it brings down the people who are already stars. Like we go without Bruno. I told you Iman starts not feeling as comfortable. We remove her family from the equation for a decent, you know,
right.
stint. It's like the second we snap out of it and you see her mother and her family, I'm like, okay, yes. Oh, we're back. Like when she tells them that she's Nightlight and it's funny with her family, I'm like, oh, that's in the finale. Like the finale actually comes back. The finale re-lands the plane. It's like we were crash landing like absurd amount. And right before we hit the ground, the pilot straightened it out and like got us on the ground.
I mean, I still think that you can watch.
Yeah, episode 1, 2, and 6.
I think it's really primarily episode 4 for me is the one that like, that just.
And the finishing of 5, once they're done with the partition.
It's the back half of 4 and the back half of 5. Because again, the front half of 4 is good. Like her getting to Karachi, I actually really like everything with her, even her cousins. I thought like.
But why do her cousins. I said this in the original episode too. She's in a mega city, one of the biggest cities in the world that she knows nothing about. And she's,
oh, and they leave her.
She's like 15. and they go, she goes, I would like to visit the train station to see where my grandma came from. They're like, no, we got a coffee date, figure it out. And they walk away. I'm like, what?
I also like that's such a reasonable thing for her to want to see. Yeah, and they're like, okay, weirdo. Good luck.
Train station. I know. They're like, that's exactly right. Oh, American. She wants to see the train station. It's like, okay.
But like, man, it's also so strange. Like, why introduce these cousins that, again, I thought like from an acting perspective were much better. And then have them just like enter and exit and then introduce a new kind of weird friend group with the Red Dagger people.
All in 6 episodes total. Yeah.
All in 1 episode.
Well, I know. But I'm saying like she already had her crew in episode 1 and 2 that was working.
And then we're given 2 new crews in 1 episode and then that we're done. And that's
and
like,
then,
it's
and
such
then the
a
fact
weird.
That they stopped the clandestine, like they, like it's just wiped off the map before the finale.
My biggest thing, like the introducing her a sloth baby moment at the campfire, like just
painful.
Haunts me.
Painful.
Just, like, but that aside, I think the other big issue with the clandestine stuff, like even if it had been really well executed and it was not, I still think it just really muddies the waters because I'm sitting here thinking, okay. So far, we have gotten, like, if we're looking at this from, like, an X-Men perspective, which we should, because when the mutation thing is revealed, we get the X-Men theme alluded to from Cartman, like that we're supposed to go there. And I'm thinking we're also supposed to look at Namor as a mutant, according to Feige. And so looking at what they have in common, and I was thinking going through this, okay, Namor is kind of, because of the way that like his people went to Talokan and took like the kind of vibranium root thing, like they're all kind of purely underwater people now. And he's the one that kind of like straddles, like he's like still got more of a human component. And then like he's kind of half of Talokan, half of the surface world.
Right.
And then I was looking at Kamala and I'm like, okay, she's like kind of half djinn, half human. And so she's got this kind of unique connection to the Bangle that's different from what like Aisha would have had, but it's also different from what like a straight human would have. And so like that's kind of interesting. And I was thinking, is that kind of the direction that we're going with like mutation here? But then at the very end, Bruno says explicitly, like, no, you are different from anyone else in your family. Like, they're all also half djinn, but you have another level of like a genetic mutation. And at that point, I'm like, man, what are we doing here? Like, so you're saying she is like half this thing from another dimension, half human, but then also mutant?
A mutated
like,
human.
As a thing that's separate from those? Like, that's such a weird thing. Like, I don't understand. Like, if they hadn't introduced the whole clandestine thing, like if they had done the partition story and not made her great grandmother like a clandestine or djinn or whatever, then we could have just had like some explanation. We wouldn't have even needed one, really. Like at the very end, when we're still wondering, okay, well, like, how does she have this unique thing to the Bangle? Like, yeah, then have the mutant reveal. But it's weird that there are so many ingredients now. And even she recognize it, or she does in universe, because she's like, you know, whatever it is, it's just another label.
Correct. The whole discussion in episode 3 and 4 is like, am I a clandestine? Am I a djinn? Are those the same things? I thought they were demons. Maybe they're not. Now I'm trying to help them. It's like, even right. She's confused.
And Asgardian stuff comes up several times.
Yeah, she's confused.
Like, she's like, am I related to Thor? He's like, maybe. And then the Red Dagger guy is like, if Thor had landed in the Himalayas, he would have been called a djinn.
She's not Asgardian, but yeah.
No, I know. But it's just all, like, they're throwing so many possibilities out.
I agree.
And then instead of it coming down to like, like it could have been, is she this? Is she this? Is she this? And then at the very end, it's no, she's actually something totally different.
Right. She's not djinn at all. She's just a mutated human.
But that's not what we get. What we get is like her whole family is kind of djinn, but she's.
And this is the other thing. We don't even have to have the djinn for the Bangle to work.
Right.
Like other people can put on the Bangle.
Yeah. I mean, Darbin uses the Bangle.
Correct. Or the person they took it from, the Kree arm. So you don't even have to say that has anything to do with it. You could just say it's this artifact, and then you can maybe manipulate it in a different way because you're mutated. But like the djinn, the demon side of it, they don't have to do anything with it. You don't have to.
And that's the other, like, that's the other weird thing is I think that the decision to make the Bangle this artifact, and even how it's kind of fleshed out in the Marvels, which again, I think makes it improves this entire show because it kind of gives it added significance. But still, like, that decision, I think, is just maybe not the right one. Or at least, like, if they're going to make her a mutant, which was a totally new thing within the MCU that has now made its way into Marvel Comics, and there's, you know, some level of like comics controversy there. But if you're going to do that, I feel like you have to pick a lane. Like, you need it to be something where she just has powers, or you need it to be something where the Bangle like gives them to her. But I think that it's just it's hard to wrap your head around
right
how she is a mutant independently, but also the bangle activates.
Do you think there's a chance that if she lost the bangle, that in the future they could go back to more of the inhuman thing? Like, okay, the bangle is doing the light and the portaling, but when she enlarges her hands to catch people, that that is the mutation. So like they could go back to the comic version of it eventually, where let's say she gets the bangle removed, could she then become stretchy?
Yeah. See, I think I would like that. It almost
it would help
like
clear it up a little bit, I guess.
It's, I mean, it could almost be like a, when Logan loses the, you know, you see him without the adamantium and it's like, oh, like this is his, like that was the, that was something that was done to him on top of his mutation. That's not part of his mutation. And so there's this, like, you understand that it enhances him, but like he's still without any of the Striker stuff, has the bone claws. Like, I would kind of like something like that with her, where you see she does, like, because if she's a mutant, what does, what does that mean?
Well, maybe
if
that's
she doesn't
where they're
have
headed
the
eventually, you know? Okay. Yeah. This is a really long episode. I this is the extreme case of it's long because I care. Like I really cared. I really cared. And I still care. It just, I can't believe some of the decisions. I want to circle back on something you asked me and I interrupted you on just so I don't miss this and get criticized for it. What do you think the Ten Rings have anything to do with it?
I mean, I like, one, you know, talking about the watch order, I do like going from Shang-Chi to Ms. Marvel, in part because of that. But also, I think with the end credits scene in Ms. Marvel, where they're trying to figure out what the actual Ten Rings artifacts are, you know, like I feel like now that, especially after the Marvels, where we see them kind of having to dig up the other bangle, and we do get some more context. Like I liked the line in there about like, you're supposed to need both to open the portal.
Yeah,
and
point.
So like seeing, like I do like,
and
that
maybe
we're
that's why
getting,
they die when they try to go through it. It's not all the way open. Maybe.
Yeah. I do think that that's part of it. Like, I think that, the idea is that it wouldn't work with just one. And I feel like we're starting to get something that I think people started theorizing back with Shang-Chi, this idea of these like maybe artifacts from the multiversal war,
which I kind of like,
we learn about in Loki.
I like
it. Which is really cool if that's the connection. And you know, maybe the Ten Rings symbol is there because like there was like, I don't know if this was an old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's possible it was like a base and it's just trying to show us that the Ten Rings have been around for a long time and that they were maybe drawn to the same power as well, like trying to find the same bangle energy.
Right.
And then if it is similar at all to the actual rings,
which
that would
make
sense.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
I do wonder, I do wonder like why there are like, why is there a Kree in this place with the Ten Rings? Like, I mean, because I think that it has to be a Kree, like just given the Captain Marvel connections.
Yeah, so the Kree have crash landed there before, you know.
Yeah, but then they don't.
Hundreds of years ago, like, maybe.
Yeah, and in the Marvels, like they don't expect the Bengals to be split up. Like when they're looking, they think that they're going to be together in the same way that in Ms. Marvel. When they're looking, they assume that they would be together. And if not, then somebody, you know, maybe stole the other one. But yeah, I don't like, I think to me, this is a mystery that I like. Like this isn't one where I'm like, oh, sure. You haven't explained it enough.
Mm-hmm.
Especially coming out of Shang-Chi, because I think one of my big points was I like the Ten Rings. I like learning more about them. I think it's a cool facet of the MCU history. And mm-hmm. I want to see like what exactly that's looked like. So I don't know. I'm hoping at some point we figure out how, when we even got the rings, and in doing that, maybe we figure out what the connection could be with those in the quantum bands. Like the rings we know didn't come from the Kree because Carol's like totally, she's never seen any technology like it.
Like I said, good point. She would recognize it, right? Like I said last week, it could be really fun if it all came together somehow. And then we rewatched and we're like, oh, that's a cool logo. And that's a shout out. And that's why you see the Ten Ring thing, you know?
And the quantum bands, don't we learn in the Marvels that that's how they originally created the jump points?
I need to rewatch it, but yes, they say something like that.
So it's like, it is certainly, it's like a very old thing that I think could make sense within the context of like a multiversal war, which we still just don't know very much about.
Right.
Since Loki season one in 2021.
Final thing here. This is so small, but these are the kind of decisions that if I'm directing the episode, I just don't understand why this choice was made. The very beginning of episode 5, we flash back to Pakistan in, you know, whatever, in the partition era. And the lady, which I think, now let me think about this, is her great-grandmother, Kamala's great-grandmother, is running away from a soldier in the jungle.
Right.
And she's running. She's being chased. Stop or I'll shoot you. Stop or I'll shoot. She turns and throws a knife at him and kills him. And this is the kind of stuff that kills me, to the Hallmark Channel part. She turns. Uh-huh. And she's got perfectly manicured eyebrows. She has got eyeliner and perfect makeup around all of her eyes and lipstick. There's not an ounce of sweat on her. There's not a speck of dust on her. It's an Instagram model that turns around and throws a knife. And I'm just thinking to myself, why?
Right.
So then that whole episode, both her and her husband, like the husband's got a nice cut beard. He's wearing like some nice makeup. His hair is very manicured. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is supposed to be over 100 years ago. You're in like a desert jungle and you're right. running away from a guy for your life. And you look that perfect. Why not? It sounds crazy, but why not to make it feel a little more realistic, rough her up a little bit? Like, why doesn't she have a little bit of like sweat and dust and she's not wearing eyeliner and she's been running from this guy for a while or like living in this hut? How in the world do they have access to that kind of makeup, clothing, manicuredness of their eyebrows and beards in that era?
Yeah.
In that exact location. So it's so small, but I'm like, yeah, now it feels like kind of Hallmarky to me.
Yeah, no, it's
the only argument I can think of that is that the actual actors were like, I want to look good for this, you know? I can't think of why you would ever do that otherwise.
I mean, I feel like there's not a lot of care there from like a again, like for a show that's been so grounded in other ways, it seems like they were not really. Again, I mean, that episode was grounding it in actual history, and like that stuff was really, really well done. Correct. But yeah, it's like a lot of that. I also just feel like the Aisha character was not, like, because she's kind of introduced in that flashback in episode 3 as the leader, kind of. Like, she's the one that's like giving the orders and then takes the bangle. And it's like, I think we're supposed to see that she has like a change of heart and her falling in love, really, like, but still it's just, I don't know. Yep. Like there are elements of that I really like. And again, I think that all of those things, even the her running, like even that scene wouldn't have had to look like that if we just pulled the clandestine stuff out of it entirely. But I agree with you.
I'm physically tired now from getting so worked up. I got to wrap it. I get so tired.
Just because this is the last time this will be topical for a bit, although I guess we can talk about it in our upcoming Spider-Man episode. But there has been speculation, or there's a rumor that Adil and Bilal, the directors of the first and last episode of Ms. Marvel, I think, are being considered to direct the next Spider-Man film.
Okay.
And that's something I think in our post, our Sunday post newsletter on Substack, which people should go check out, like we said, I think Greg and I are going to have a piece soon kind of going through some of the various people that have been considered to direct the new project and the rumors going around. And you know, I was watching this, and like we said, the first episode was so great. The last episode was so great, and I can see how that would fit. in, like, I could see how that would work in like a similar way to how John Watts Spider-Man worked. I think as much as I liked those episodes and as much as we just praised like the all the New Jersey side of Ms. Marvel, I kind of don't think that that would be the right pick.
Well, you don't know yet, to be fair. You're basing it off what they were trying to do with Ms. Marvel, but you don't know what they would try to do with Spider-Man necessarily.
Well, that's true. Although I have seen like they did, they directed the last two Bad Boys movies.
Okay.
And I haven't seen the new one that's either coming out or in theaters currently, but I've seen the one before. And you can kind of start to see their style where it's kind of like hyper stylized.
Okay.
And I think I would not be disappointed with it, but I just wanted to weigh in here since it's out there. Like, I think that I'm still, of all of the names that have been thrown around, I'm like trying to, what's the word? I'm going to try to manifest that for Spider-Man 4, we just bring back Marcus and McFeely and the Russos and come full circle back to the folks that introduced him into the MCU in the first place.
How crazy would that be with a tone shift? You know what I mean? Like what they did with Winter Soldier, basically.
Yeah.
Let's save it for the Spider-Man episode.
I know.
We're an hour 20 or whatever.
That's my tease. That's my tease.
Yeah. My last piece of news that we missed at the beginning. I forgot. This is the other thing. I brought up the Tony Stark thing. There was a rumor that in the last month, did you see what director met with Marvel? Apparently took a meeting for directing a film coming up. Did you see this?
Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele reportedly has met with Marvel Studios. Fun. Now, who knows? Like, again, that's where I say, like, it doesn't mean he's doing a horror movie. I don't think it means anything. There was a rumor that maybe it's the X-Men film that they're making that Jordan Peele would make.
Again, that would be cool.
We don't know any of this. I haven't even seen Jordan Peele on a budget. He's done all this stuff not on a budget. But I will say, Get Out, again, one of the best movies, one of the top 50 movies of the last 25 years, for sure. It's possible. So anyways, it's crazy. We've had George Miller tossed out. We've had Jordan Peele and now Adil and Bilal here for just new projects. Okay, we got to go.
Yeah.
I loved Ms. Marvel for parts. I hated Ms. Marvel for parts. I think it's the most extreme episode we have. I shouldn't say hated, but probably the worst, the most embarrassed I've been at the MCU for parts. The most extreme episode we have in the MCU. Mm-hmm. And I am putting this out to listeners. Hit me up. Where are we wrong? But more importantly, if it's not the most extreme, what's the other alternative? I want to think about it. I want to find when something else felt out of place. By the way, even like Captain Marvel, which I don't love, never feels like this. Like Talos is killing it and Nick Fury's killing it. Like it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Dude, even like Iron Man 2, which I know that
Sam Rockwell's awesome. And like even the villain I'm more connected to there for sure.
Yeah.
Not even close. Yeah.
Like Thor the Dark World, even, I think, like, we don't, like, it gets so silly and we laugh at, like, how ludicrous the plot is. But scene to scene.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think, like, I think Thor the Dark World is one where you back up and you're like, man, like, this is ridiculous. But I don't think, like, when you're watching a scene, you're like, oh, I don't like that this is happening.
Yeah, this is embarrassing.
Like, that doesn't feel, I don't get squirmy in the same way.
For sure. We love you all. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. Thank you for subscribing and following and whatever you do to get this podcast. We appreciate you. Thank you. We'll see you right back here next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch, Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.